Hello, everyone, and welcome to FYI. This is Andrea Conway. Sorry, I was distracted by our good friend Randy Titone, who's with us today.
In the house.
And my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
And we have a special guest with us today that I'll introduce here in just a few seconds.
But live in the studio audience.
That's right. We want to first start out by just telling everyone, if you're new to hearing our segment, who we are and what we do. And we hope, as the introduction says, that we are here to elevate your thinking and inspire everyone to living a healthier lifestyle. And we do that with our group that we have formed called Plant-Based OKC, and we are the group.
Yes, we are.
I used to like to say we were part of a group, and then I realized we were the only group members. So we started this Plant-Based OKC probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And we started by having some seminars at a local hospital. And these seminars were free of charge. They started out being held quarterly, and we found that there was a very strong interest in these seminars, and we started filling up and ended up shortly thereafter starting to have them monthly. And still to this day, we hold these typically once a month, and you can find out the dates on our website at plantbasedokc.com. Our next seminar is March 21st, and these are at Community Hospital, which is in South Oklahoma City, not South Community Hospital, but
showing your age,
Community Hospital, which is at 3100 Southwest 89th Street. Like I said, these are held typically once a month. They last about 3 hours. You're fed a plant-based lunch, and they are free of charge. So if you're interested in learning more about what you're going to hear us discuss today, I would recommend that you go to our website and sign up for one of these events. In addition to that, we also go to a local restaurant the first Monday of every month. We've been going to a place called Piatta's Italian Kitchen at Northwest 63rd in May. And they have a private room for us there and have a plant-based menu for us. And it's really more of a support group for everyone to gather and talk to other people that are eating this way or that are interested in eating this way and sharing recipes. And we're there to answer questions and talk about various topics. And then once a month, we're here at FYI to share some information with you. Anything you want to add to that, Randy?
The other thing I want to add is that you two have gotten much better looking since the last time I saw you.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
Mm-hmm. A couple weeks at least.
Yeah.
Well, we are reversing our age with the way we eat, I'd like to think. So, and what we're here to talk about is a plant-based lifestyle, and that is eating whole food plant-based, which means no animal products. So that includes butter, milk, eggs,
cheese,
any kind of meat, fish, anything with a mother or a face is what we like to say. And I get a lot of people that say they don't eat any dairy. And then
they're eating butter and cheese.
They say that because they're not just drinking glasses of milk and they think that means they don't consume any dairy. It's odd when you really boil down to it, what people really are and aren't eating, that they kind of kid themselves into thinking.
There was a new study out on milk where drinking 1/3 a cup a day increased your risk of breast cancer 30%.
Wow. A third cup?
1/3 of a cup.
Well, that's nothing when it comes to milk. But
so two cups per day increase risk of breast cancer 70% to 80%.
Wow.
So,
stay away
got
from
milk,
the milk,
got cancer.
Stay away from the milk. So, if you're new to our story, which you can find on our website, and I'll just give a small intro here, is that my husband was told 10 years ago, almost 11 this year, at age 53, that he needed a triple bypass.
Hey, you just told him my age.
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
We're not scared of telling our age. So, yes, he's 64 now. So at 53, he was told he needed triple bypass. And after much discussion and reading and research and lots of things going into this, but we opted not to have the surgery and to try a whole food plant-based diet as recommended by Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. And today, our guest has kind of a similar experience, and we wanted to have him on the show to, you know, we've told our story time and time and time again, and it's on our website with a video, and it's something that gets told at all of our events over. So it's nice that we sometimes can share other people's testimony so that everyone knows this isn't a fluke. It's not just he has some kind of crazy genes that reacted to this diet for one reason or another, and that it's not something that can help everyone, because I truly believe it is. And I think that this story you're going to hear today will help kind of solidify that. So our guest is Jack Smith-Schick. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Andrea.
We welcome you today. You know, Jack, do you remember like how we met or how many years ago it's been that we actually...
When you were over at the other food place, a friend of ours went to what was then the Forum.
Okay.
I don't remember. And he told me about it, and I had no idea that we had two Dr. Esselstyn alumni that were in the same city at the same time, although when Jimmy and I talked, then I find out that we were like twin sons of different mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Our stories were so similar. And I came and talked to Jimmy before I went to Cleveland.
Oh, yes, yes, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Which really bolstered, because I was at that time was still apprehensive, and I was really still pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. So how many years ago was that?
That would have been in the early spring of 2014.
So, gosh, it's right at 6 years then. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
But time flies, Jack, especially when you're feeling good.
My story, as Jimmy and I have talked, my story is different from Jimmy. Jimmy's in several ways, but in the spring of 2013, I felt like I had the flu, but I didn't have all the flu symptoms. I just had this absolutely total lethargic. I had zero energy. I thought, there's something wrong here, but I couldn't put anything on it. I didn't have any pain. I just didn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I just constantly didn't feel good. It was an effort to get up. I went to my regular doc that you go to when you have a cold or whatever, explained the whole situation to him, and I think that they drew some blood, and he said, you're anemic. As I recall, he said, you have iron poor blood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he started me on this regimen of taking a bunch of iron or whatever. That went on for, and I religiously did it. I tried to eat iron-rich foods, and 2 or 3 months went by, and I wasn't getting any better. If anything, I was getting worse. Well, I made it through this. I still was not, I don't particularly care for, no offense to Dr. Conway, but I don't care to really contribute to the doctor's society. So I stumbled through the summer just still continuing with the anemia diagnosis, and the fall came, and I was really getting worse. I could hardly go to work, and it was getting where my life was basically a book in the remote. Was about it. My wife was trying to be very supportive. Well, being a dual-edged sword, probably, a cardiologist was a good friend and client at the time as well. And I just was at the point where I was so sick that I thought, well, I've got to do something. I called him, and he said, well, come on up to the office. And I came up, and that became the hamster wheel of cardiac tests.
Yes.
I did, I think, every cardiac test known to humanity. I completely resisted the angiogram. I just didn't, that was just too much. So finally, after all these tests, he said, my suspicion is you've got really some severe coronary artery disease, but I can't really verify it without angiography. So around the middle or the latter part of December, he convinced me finally, and with family goading as well, to have this angiogram. So the end of the year of 2013, I did that. Well, when I came to, then I could tell by the looks on the people and the faces in the room that things weren't really good.
I've been there too, Jack.
I didn't really recall that much of it, still under the anesthesia, but the bottom line was, is continuing all these tests, is that I had two arteries that were 100% occluded, and my third one was basically 70% occluded, and I was basically surviving on my collaterals, and my ejection fraction was 27.
Yeah, I want to stop right there and let...
So an ejection fraction is the percentage of volume that your heart squeezes out with each beat. And normal is 55 to 60.
And you were at 27?
And I was at 27.
So the, around 20 and below, they start thinking about a heart transplant.
Probably what was leading to your lethargic state.
Yeah, okay. But I never, unlike Jimmy's, I never had that left arm pain. I never had the proverbial elephant
chest
standing
pain,
on
nothing.
Your chest. I never had any
just
of that.
Just lethargy.
I think in essence that my cardiovascular system was just shutting down. It was basically your plumbing was just at some point was going to clock. So... fast forward to that week, which was a recall, is that it was emphatic that if I didn't have immediate triple, possibly quadruple bypass surgery, that I was going to die. I thought, well, that's really enlightening news.
Yes.
Can't wait on that.
Yes.
So
wow, you guys have very similar, other than the ejection fraction, but definitely.
I left the heart hospital and went and... immediately started, at that time, I was a neophyte. I had no idea about coronary artery bypass surgery other than hearing people that had it and whatnot. So I started doing the research. I started doing the research and ordering books. So I ordered basically everything on heart disease that was on Amazon. I read about every study in the world that was in English. Some I had to push the flag to get it to turn to English from all over the world. Read the Helsinki study, the Harvard Nurses study, the Farmingham Heart study, the VA study. I don't even remember all the studies.
Wow.
The Max Planck Institute study. All these studies.
Is this just in your DNA to do something like that? Because most people would not do this.
I had come from a business that required a lot of research on totally different things. So I was research-oriented anyway. And then this was something that was really, at the time, really serious. So I, after reading all of these studies, I told my wife, I said, I'm not going to have this surgery. I'm not going to have the surgery. It absolutely is going to do nothing for my longevity. It's going to do nothing but alleviate symptoms. It's going to do nothing for the disease. All of these percentile risk factors, strokes, heart attacks, changes in your personality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The risk is just horrendous. So I literally, after reading these books, doing all this research, this whole week, my cardiologist and friend is pressuring. He's emailing, texting, calling, when are you going to go see the surgeon, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So the end of that week came, and then the early the next week. I literally Googled alternatives to coronary artery bypass surgery. The first page came up with really some interesting things, chelation therapy, some books, almost down to the full moon and stump water deal. The top of the second page came up, and what caught my eye was the Cleveland Clinic. And I thought, Cleveland Clinic, this has to have some credibility. Mm-hmm. So I clicked on it, and it was Dr. Esselstyn, and it talked about prevent and reverse heart disease in the book.
And that is not a book that you'd come across.
No, it wasn't.
In all of the research you'd done.
Because I was researching heart disease and coronary artery disease from a medical standpoint.
Right.
Even pulling up studies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even had to go buy a medical dictionary because I had no idea what most of the stuff was. So I got a copy of Dr. Esselstyn's book, and I read the book immediately all the way through, and I thought, this, when you read the case studies, agreed you didn't really find people that were parallel to your particular situation, but it sounded like they were having the same issues that you were, and they didn't. A couple had done the bypass surgery. So I called my cardiologist, and I said, if I buy this book, he still pressured me to have the surgery. And he said, if I buy this book, will you read it over the weekend? He said, yeah, I told him basically what it was. And I could tell from the tone of his voice that he was not at all enthused about it. He had zero buy-in.
Well, it was only 18 patients.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the argument from the doctor's standpoint.
Exactly. So I bought a second copy of the book. He came over to my house Friday after he finished at the heart hospital. I had the same deal about, if you don't have the surgery, you're going to die. Every time I get an emergency call.
Your poor wife. Here she's caught between you and
absolutely.
Him.
He is texting and, I don't text. He was texting her and emailing her and pressuring her more so. She was just wonderfully supportive about it. She was actually an attuned-in bystander. But he sat in my kitchen and he told me, he said he was holding the book, and I explained to him, I said, I'm not doing the surgery. He said, well, I don't know about this book, but if you don't do the surgery, you're going to die. And I said, well, I might die, but I'm not doing the surgery. So I said,
that's some pretty intense pressure.
Yeah, it really was.
It takes a special character to have that kind of pressure and not cave.
Well, as you know, because you read the same studies that I did, and you saw the same percentiles, and you came to exactly the same conclusion that I did. Exactly. That's why we had such parallels. He left with the book, and I said, will you let me know on Monday? So I talked to him on Monday, and I said, did you read the book? He said, yeah, I read the book. He said, I have to admit that it's very impressive, but there's no one in that book in those case studies that has the same anatomical problems, same cardiology and the anatomical issues that you do. He said, I don't have a comparison to the anatomy, and you must have the surgery. So we went through the same thing again. This surgery battle was still going on. So that week, which was basically the middle of January of 2014 for the chronology, I'd had the angiogram the very end of December, like the 30th, and then the first 2 weeks of January was all this research, all this discussions with him, Dr. Esselstyn's book, et cetera, et cetera. So the second week of January, having no clue but the book is what you were doing. There really wasn't. Now there's a lot more information.
Oh, sure.
There's an incredible amount of supportive things now, 6 years later. So Linda, my wife, to her enormous credit, she, unbeknownst to me, because I was still sick, I was doing good to walk the length of the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a tough deal. I knew inwardly, I knew how sick I was. I knew that I was dying. I was already thinking about things that I wanted to ask God. You know, what was he thinking about ticks? And who figured out how to eat an artichoke? And there were a lot of things that, I was dying.
Know.
I didn't think I was going to make it. I didn't think I was that sick. I was really that sick. Well, Linda, my wife, to her credit, she called the Cleveland Clinic like the beginning of the third week or the third week of January. Dr. Chesson was out of town and explained the situation to, I guess, his assistant at the time. And left a message. As I was so sick, she didn't tell me anything. In the meantime, I'm being indoctrinated to the food in Dr. Esselstyn's book. And having been born and raised in Louisiana, this was totally foreign to me.
Yes.
I mean, if it walked, crawled, swam, or flew and couldn't get it out of the pot, it was...
You had to fry it.
It was for sure edible. And two, my food lifestyle was awful. I mean, I thought caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, and chocolate were the four basic food groups.
Yep.
So starting this diet was a huge deal. No, I'd seen kale decorating a salad bar.
I'm with you. Yeah, that's where I was. I didn't even know you ate kale.
No. First time I
didn't know that was kale.
Yeah. First time I tasted kale, I went, who in the world would eat this cardboard?
Yeah. So stumbling for about 10 days through the recipes in the book and thinking, wow, you know, this is going to be a big adjustment. But I'm still really, really sick. Well, about the first couple of days of February, about gosh, it had to be after 9 o'clock at night, the phone rang. And Linda answered the phone, and I could tell from her questions that, I thought, well, this is really strange. Well, it was Dr. Esselstyn.
Wow.
And he had gotten the message, and he called, and she said, well, let me let you talk to Jack. So I got on the phone with him, and he said, I got your wife's message, and I understand you're really sick. And I told him briefly the whole story, what had gone on with my cardiologist, et cetera. He asked me three questions. He said, what's your height and weight? Do you have a family history of heart disease? And what's your total cholesterol? So I chatted with him briefly, and he said, what are you doing? I said, well, we're following the recipes in your book. That's as of 10 days ago. And he said, what are you doing for leafy greens? And I said, well, I'm stumbling through kale, but when I was a kid, I had collard greens were a typical thing in the South. And he said, well, that was good. He said, what I want you to start doing tomorrow morning is I want you to eat a fist-sized portion 6 times a day of kale, collard greens, bok choy,
green leafy vegetables.
All the green his list of green leafy vegetables. Right.
He can go through them pretty quick.
He can go through them really quick. Exactly. So I thought, wow, a fist-sized portion 6 times a day. So Linda went to the store and got greens, and the next morning I started the steaming greens, and I'm still really sick. I'm still have trouble getting from the bed to the kitchen to do that routine. I started that 6 times a day green rotation, and that 6th portion many days was tough. It was tough, but I persevered and got it out. Well, I started that and went through the first 4 or 5 days, and then I forgot to interject that Dr. Esten asked me that night that he called. He says, well, would it be possible for you to get your test and get them up to me where I can really kind of observe what your physical situation was? And I said, well, my situation, my cardiologist, that shouldn't be a problem. I called him the next day. They got everything on digital. Linda went to the post office, express mailed it to Cleveland. He got it a couple of days later. When he called the next time, he said, I've looked at your angiogram, I looked at your stress test, looked at all your test results, and he said, you're really sick. But I think we can do something. We can improve this situation. He said, I've had people with, I don't remember ejection fractions quite so low, but I've had people with really low ejection fractions and this green situation, and I'm going to let Dr. Conway explained. He went to great detail to explaining the nitric oxide scenario, which you might want to interject what happens with the leafy greens.
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, there's an amino acid in the leafy greens called arginine. And arginine is utilized by the lining of your vessels, so what's called the endothelium. Arginine is through an enzyme converted to nitric oxide, and you need nitric oxide is a compound that was just discovered in 1992. It was first referred to as vascular relaxing factor, the guy that actually discovered nitric oxide won the Nobel Prize in 1998, and nitric oxide was listed as the molecule of the year. I didn't even know we had those, but it's the nitric oxide that allows the vessel to relax. There's a law in physics that amount of fluid that goes through a tube is proportional to the diameter of the vessel, tube, whatever, to the 4th power. So it doesn't take much relaxing of the vessels to significantly improve blood flow. That's why Dr. Esselstyn says that he can heart attack proof you in 2 weeks. Because you quit the assault and then you add the green leafy vegetables, and the assault is dietary fat, especially added oil.
But having these greens throughout the day keeps that nitric oxide building up in your bloodstream.
Correct.
To get
Since
to
it doesn't last very long. You have to have continual production of it.
I see.
So That explanation, Dr. Conway's explanation, trust me, was much shorter than Dr. Essel's.
I bet.
As you well know. At any rate, the greens, I started the green regimen in addition to other things, and then we started ordering books on vegan diets and eliminating all the oil and introduced to a lot of other foods at the time and different things, being careful to follow his regimen. Mm-hmm. Of the no oil, steaming, boiling, whatever, which we did. So he called after he'd gotten my test, as I said, and he said, how are you doing with the greens? And I said, I'm doing my six times a day. I said, that six portions sometimes is really tough. He said, I know, but all the nitric oxide is really what's going to make this big difference. After about and at this point, I'm still really, really sick. But after a couple of weeks, I'm actually starting to feel a little bit better. I mean, I'm not entering any 5Ks or marathons, but I could at least go get the mail without having to sit down. So I'm progressively feeling better and better and better. I'm still getting the pressure to have the surgery, but I'm feeling a little bit better. Well, Dr. Esselstyn's situation at the Cleveland Clinic is once a month, usually toward the end of the month, he sees a small group of his, he says, patients and conducts a very extensive seminar. Mrs. Esselstyn prepares food, as mm-hmm, you both know. Mm-hmm. Well, this was February was going, he was full in February, it was going into March. So I wanted to go. He's calling about once or twice a week, checking on me, to his credit. And
wow,
there was a particular bad cold snap at the end of February in 14, and he called and he said, I'm about 10 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock here, and it's 10 o'clock in Cleveland. I'm thinking, wow. He says, you know, I just saw the weather, and he says, it's really cold in Oklahoma. He said, how are you doing? Because the cold weather, when you've got serious coronary disease, you have this contraction situation where your chest, the cold air is no fun. As mm-hmm. it's going in, I mean, by this time I'm walking outside, covered up face in the whole routine, but I could at least walk to the end of the street and back. So his February was full, and his March, there was a couple of openings in March for the seminar. So I called my cardiologist and I said, I want to go to Cleveland to Dr. Esselstyn and spend the day with him.
He said, you release me?
Yeah. He said, Jack, if you get on an airplane, you're going to die. There is no way that with your cardiovascular situation that you can stand the pressure, the traveling, the whole routine. There's no way that you're going to be able to do that. So I, disappointed as I was, but I continued the green regimen. And I'm feeling better and better and better progressively, not enormous portions at once, but I'm feeling better gradually.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of March, there's a park down the street. I could actually walk down to the end of the park, which before I couldn't walk the length of the house.
Right.
Continuing the greens. So I'm feeling better. I'm walking more. I get up to where I walk the length of the park and back, which I think ends up to be like a half a mile. So I continue to do that, continue the diet, continue the greens, just no variation whatsoever. I have to admit, I did not cheat at mm-hmm, all. There was mm-hmm. no oil.
You're scared to death, though.
Yeah.
At that point in time.
Yeah.
That's the way I was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So April came about, and there was an opening in April to go to Cleveland. Same scenario with the cardiologist. There's no way that you can get on an airplane and go to Cleveland. I don't care.
But you've not had any repeat tests at this point from him.
No, and I wasn't going to have any repeat tests after going through the last of November, all of December every test that cardiology knows, I did it.
Yeah.
You could be stuck, injected, drawn, rotated with cameras, whatever. I had done it. The two or three times of the treadmill injection stress test stuff. Failed all of them, and giant, wonderful, set new records for how bad you failed. Not my cardiologist, but the other attending cardiologists say, wow, you're really sick. You need to have the surgery.
Yes,
getting it from all of these angles. So April came, same scenario, and then I was bantering him so bad that he said, I'll tell you what they'll do. If you'll come to the heart hospital, and I said, time out. You're not going to stick me, cut me, draw anything. Yeah. I'm done with that. He said, no, no, no. He said, if you'll come up and just do a comprehensive ultrasound, he said, He said, I can get a good idea. He said, it won't be the same as an angiogram or whatever, but I can get an idea. I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll come up there and do that. This is the end of April.
Which is a test that's non-invasive.
Third week of April, right, which is what how he convinced me to go do this. So I went and did that. And in the meantime, I forgot to interject that none of my clothes are fitting because I'm losing weight like crazy. At the end of the time, I ended up losing like 50 pounds. Didn't have any clothes that fit. Wore these baggy clothes to have the test. So I go do the ultrasound. The attendant finishes the ultrasound, and she said, I'll send these up to your cardiologist's office, and if you want to go up in his office and wait. So I said, fine. And by this time, I'm actually feeling pretty good. And I finish the test, get cleaned up, go up to his office, and I sat down and wait. 10 or 15 minutes later, he comes in with obviously looking at the folder of my tests, and he said, I've been practicing cardiology for 28 years, and I don't know that I've seen anything like this. He said, your ejection fraction is in the high 40s.
Oh, my God.
And I said, well, can I go to Cleveland? He said, yeah. He said,
you can go
to Cleveland. So I thought, great. So there was an opening in May, and I went. So Linda and I, my wife and I, we went to Cleveland to Dr. Esten at the end of May. After I had talked to Dr. Conway, and so I kind of knew what to expect, which was a good thing because y'all had been 2 years before me. Same scenario, so which helped a lot in getting up there and going through the whole routine. So we get there. It was fine after all these phone calls to actually meet him face to face. And he said, well, he said, I can tell that, there seems to be quite an improvement in how you're doing. And I said, yeah, I'm still doing the greens and thanks to you, whatever. And we thought, well, this is going to be, there won't be much of this. We laughed and we said, coming from Oklahoma, we're going to be the further people from the furthest distance from here. So he sat at these tables of like four other people or whatever. We sat there and the lady that was sitting me on the left was from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, my.
And the couple on Linda's right had come from Los Angeles. And then Dr. Esten said, I'm sorry, we're going to be a little late getting started. We're waiting on a couple of physicians to get here from the airport. And so they come in, introduce them, and there's these two cardiologists from Pakistan that had come to be there that day to,
see the seminar. You were the closest.
Exactly. So we're thinking, wow, this really, really is something. So as you know, it's an extremely intensive day.
Yes.
It's a very, very intensive day. So we went through the day and made it through, and then we decided it was going to be too much to immediately come back to Oklahoma, so we rented a place on Lake Erie. And at that time, it was kind of, I think back about it now, because so much has changed in the interim, because at the time, we had neither Whole Foods nor Trader Joe's. And then cooking and talking to Ann Esselstyn, after she'd prepared the meal, she was telling me about all this cool stuff at the Whole Foods and the Trader Joe's that we've been ordering food on Amazon and beans and stumbling through. In the meantime, I'm reading all these books on plant foods from all over the world you can't get, whatever. So that was a cool deal to go stock up at the stores in Cleveland while we were there. So we'd spent that, and then I got back to Oklahoma, and I stayed on the regimen. And by this time now, my cardiologist has backed off of that. I don't have to have the surgery
or you're going to die.
The surgery or you're going to die. Exactly. So, and succinctly, that's kind of what happened with us. And we've in the meantime, we've only explored different foods, still on a total plant-based, no-oil regimen, and have not deviated from the diet. And although,
let me explain or interject about the no oil, because we've said that several times.
Right.
But that arginine enzyme that converts arginine into nitric oxide, if you have oil added to your diet, it blocks the conversion for 4 to 6 hours after each dose of added oil.
So no matter how much of that you eat, it's kind of counteractive to it.
It does counteract it. it's the same enzyme that converts nitric oxide in the presence of oil will make that a compound that will not relax the vessel wall.
So, yeah, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot if you eat added oil with all these green leafies.
Right. And then just the and boosting all the green leafies with the Brussels sprouts and all the cruciferous things, the cabbages, and has really, really helped as well. So we found out that, as everyone has that's now gone on, that's really got studied and involved in the plant-based lifestyle, is there is really a lot of variety. You just have to pick and choose so carefully.
Well, I mean, for us, for sure, we are eating things that we never ate before.
Yeah.
And the world has opened up to a lot more rainbow of fruits and vegetables than we ever considered eating before.
That we
didn't know anything about.
Yeah, right. I might have eaten a potato, but it had to be usually fried.
Right.
Or covered with butter and sour cream.
Yeah. Sour cream.
Right, yeah. And there's a lot more information just in the last 5 years. There is a lot more information, a lot more products that you were before us and what we've experienced.
Yeah, that we were like you.
I mean, reached critical mass in the United States where we'll keep seeing more and more change.
Yeah. I see the plant-based news in the UK and Europe, and they're even ahead of us in products and the whole routine. I mean, I think now that I'd have never thought 5 years ago that I would be eating chickpea flour pasta. But now you think, wow, this is really, really terrific.
Yeah.
Right. Mung bean.
Then the other day, the hearts of palm pasta.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I read about it, and I thought, I'm going to have to send to Jimmy and Andrew and see if they're seeing these.
Yeah,
and you,
yeah,
of course, had seen it. And I thought, well, you look at the ingredients. When things only have two or three ingredients, you think, wow, you know, we're reasonably safe.
So have you had any other tests in the last 5 years?
No.
Since then, no. And that's like Jimmy. I mean, you know, everybody asked him, well, did you have a repeat arteriogram? Are you sure that you've reversed this? And I think you just, I mean, Esselstyn says no, don't
well,
do that.
Especially for me, because we discussed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had a number of knee surgeries and I finally needed a total knee, and that was 2 years after going on the diet. So I called my cardiologist up and said, hey, I'm going to have a knee replacement. And he said, well, I'm not going to clear you unless we do another arteriogram. If I see anything, I'm going to stent it. And the next day, I got a message from Forks Over Knives on Facebook, and it said, new meta-analysis reveals stenting asymptomatic heart disease just to increase your risk of having a heart attack. And I saw this message. I called Andrea and said, I think I just got a message from God. I had no other way to explain that. She called Dr. Esselstyn. At the time, he did not know me. We had not met. And he returned her phone call to me and spent about 45 minutes on the phone. And he said, do not have a repeat arteriogram. It's not worth the risk. So if you do the diet, the results are,
I mean, here we are,
basically how you feel.
Yeah, how you feel, you're exercising, your blood pressure's down, all these markers, and, you know, you're able to go back to walking.
Oh, yeah, now I usually walk a couple of miles a day.
Yeah.
But last spring, I think last March or last April, I had not seen him since the Cleveland Clinic in the end of May of 2014, and the last March on the holistic cruise, I saw that he was going to be the keynote speaker before, and I told Linda, my wife, I said, we'd already done two of the cruises, and I thought, but I'd really like to go just, if nothing else, just to catch up with him.
Yeah.
And which I did, and it was interesting because of what Jimmy just said, because in chatting with him on the boat, it was, oh, home, you know, how you doing, great, whatever. So it was the same thing. He said, I said, you know, my cardiologist has intimated he would love for me to have
another angiogram and see.
Because he wants to see, although he says I cannot in any way encourage that. If anything, I discourage the risk which we all knew
from
the beginning.
Right.
Oh,
right.
He started spouting the statistics off to me. And I mean, Dr. Esselstyn was a general surgeon. And so, you know, he sort of, what's the fatality risk having an arteriogram? And it just went kind of down the list. And really, there was no valid reason to do it other than just the fact that I'd have proof.
Right.
And it's not worth
it. Well,
and
I think what's scary with that being said, now that we know all that stuff, we went into our first arteriogram with no second thought about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, all of his partners and friends had had one done. He was of the age that he was destined to, you know, have this based on his dad's history. And so it was like, oh, he needs an arteriogram. No big deal. We'll go in there. We'll get some stents and go home. You know, I mean, that was really our mentality at the time.
It was. And totally ignorant of the risks involved.
He didn't start doing the research on the statistics of all that until after they told him he couldn't have the stents and he needed triple bypass. That's when he woke up and decided, hey, now, stents one thing, but cracking my chest open.
Yeah, sawing me in half and jerking some veins out of my leg and
sawing
them on my heart
totally
and hope they work. It's
deal.
A different deal. What was interesting, too, is that Jimmy and I, we differed in one respect in that I read Dr. Esselstyn's book. And then in one of those night conversations in the preceding couple of 3 weeks, he asked me if I had read the China Study.
Mm.
And where he started, and the China Study,
right.
And then read
Got
Dr. Esselstyn's
mm-hmm,
book.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, those two parallels 6 years ago, as we all know, that was kind of the key thing.
Right,
that was
right. The China Study and Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease.
Right.
Yep.
It's still very key.
Yeah.
In that period, I look back, and I was looking back the other day because I have this huge stack of all these heart disease books, you know, like 15 of them.
Yeah, our library is nothing but that now.
Exactly. All these things, you know, don't trust your heart to your doctor and fighting heart disease and all this other stuff. But you know, the one thing, and I think back because it was in that early January, late January, early February period, is I did read a Chinese study that had been translated to English, and they did for coronary artery blockage. And I talked to Dr. Conway about it a long time ago and explained to him that I was a see no harm deal. But it was taking, in essence, a very slow cooker of wood ear mushrooms and
right.
dissolving into the broth, because the wood ears turned out had really high medicinal qualities.
Right.
And I did that early on. And I've often looked back. I'm convinced the leafy greens had enormous cause and effect. But by the same token, I thought, you know, the wood ears, they didn't, there was no bad, there wasn't, you thought, well, there can't really be a downside to this.
Mm-hmm,
you,
right.
You go have sweet and sour soup, you're eating wood ear mushrooms, so if I'll make this broth out of them, it's wood ears and water,
well, now
I
you're,
feel
now
I'm
we know
okay.
How all the mushrooms in general are
right.
so health promoting, and not just heart disease, but cancer and
exactly. wood ear, especially because it has a beta glucan that will suck cholesterol out of your
which
body.
Which is what oats have and what the collard greens
right.
have and so many other
yeah.
of the,
but
you know.
At that time, you didn't, you know, you're so sick and you don't think about it. All you think about, well, yeah, this mushroom water, you know, that can't really do any harm. And you're thinking, well, in addition
I
to
think
the greens,
you two just need to thank
anything.
Your lucky stars that you have wives that were able to.
Oh, there's no question about it.
Well, there's a, yeah.
Nurse you back to health.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to do it if you didn't jump on board.
Well, no. And I think that's key because, and Esselstyn talks a lot about that. When he in his seminars, he makes the couples come together.
Right.
Because it's key that both of you in the situation are doing that, because I can't imagine either one of you two being able to be successful doing this on your
no.
own.
No, and I was fortunate, too, that Linda had basically been a vegetarian, not she did still did oil and did cheese and whatever
sure.
before, but it was a pretty easy transgression to the Esselstyn
for her, yeah,
no mm-hmm. oil, whatever. Mm-hmm. With her, made it a whole lot easier, which for me was like enormous shock. It was gigantic.
Well, and that's what he's Jimmy says all the time. The
I
first
know.
Six he, months, he thinks he
right.
was in shock because
well, I know I was the first month,
right?
I don't even remember it.
And he lost around 35 or 40 pounds in the first couple months we did this.
I lost 30 in the first month alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that period, that 3 or 4 month period. I lost 50 pounds. It was like, wow, where's all this weight going? You know, that you're starting to feel better and you're starting to feel better.
I lost 50 pounds as well, all told.
By
I mean, most I ever weighed was 226.
Yeah, I was right at 230 and I stay around 180 now. And I think that part of it, I think you reach that point where then your metabolism, right.
Yeah, because I think people worry they're going to, you know, they lose that much weight, they're just going to keep, like, losing till they waste away. But your body adapts to that, and it becomes its norm. And Jimmy has been now been this weight for 10 years, and it doesn't really fluctuate. I mean, it might fluctuate.
Yeah, Dr. Esten's
3 or 4 pounds, it doesn't fluctuate much.
Dr. Esten's theorem is that when that weight that you had in high school, you have reached your optimum then. And if you can maintain that, you're not really going to go up and down. Which
is, which I think we
have found to be true. I weighed what I weighed as a junior in high school.
Yeah, me too.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but while we do, I want to. Jack took a trip recently that I wanted him to maybe just shed some information on, and I'll have Randy explain about the Blue Zones and why you would go visit a place like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I am a big fan and big proponent of the Blue Zones, and I know Jack is too. And so the Blue Zones started out as a research project with National Geographic. What they did was they looked at places in the world where people lived the longest, where they were thriving at age of 100, and they basically circled places on the map with a blue Sharpie, and that's why they called those the Blue Zones. And so those places are all very unique and all very different. They're all scattered all over the map. There's the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica. There's Ikaria, Greece. There's Sardinia, Italy. There's Okinawa, Japan. And then the bringing up the rear is the great Seventh-day Adventist colony in Loma Linda, California. So, and the key for those folks is that they eat very little to no meat. And so the other places in the world where people are thriving are very plant-centered, very plant-based lifestyles. And so those places that do eat some meat, they eat the meat more as a condiment instead of the main course. And so they are doing things in relationship to their diet, which is increasing their lifespan. We've sort of followed a little bit. They have these sort of health groups or healthy groups they call MOIs, which is sort of a support group where they get together and like-minded people sharing ideas, and they walk to work, they walk to school, they walk to their friends' houses, and they really increase their leisurely activities. They don't go to the gym, and then they might partake in some wine in the evening or afternoon with their friends. So, Jack, we were talking earlier, and you went to Costa Rica as well, correct?
I did. I like Randy, I'd read the Blue Zones and was incredibly impressed, and I was not at all motivated after reading their diets to go visit any of the other places. But the Nicoya, it basically intrigued me. So we did some research. I looked at the Nicoya Peninsula diet. And I have to be clear, it's not Costa Rica in quotation marks. It's only the Nicoya Peninsula that is the Blue Zone, which is that finger on the Pacific coast that is not terribly large. So we did the research, and we rented a small house that had a complete kitchen. As it turned out, it was like a UK cold water flat. It didn't have hot water, but that turned out okay. And about in the middle of the peninsula, near a town called Samara, that was exactly on the Pacific coast, and then all these wonderful beach towns around there. And we stayed there for 3 weeks, and we went to the farmer's market. We tried to, my Spanish is zero. Yeah, you know, you can say taco and burrito and a couple other things. And
hola, that, bueno.
Yeah, and you're done. Well, at any rate, fortunately, there were a lot of expats there, so you could kind of communicate. And Samara had a very good organic store and an organic market, and the farmer's market in Nicoya was tough because no one spoke English. You kind of had to point and listen. But in talking to the people about recipes, it was very, very interesting. And before reading about the Nicoya, is they're still doing research of why they have all these incredible long longevity of the normal populace on the Nicoya. And let me really be clear, because as it turned out, we got to spend some time with the local doctor and have a chat with him. And it is the local Nicoya Peninsula people that have the wonderful longevity. The expats are not doing so great. There's no fast food, but they're still imbibing in lots of alcohol and lots of cheeseburgers and whatever. At any rate, their water is one thing that they're attributing, because it's so mineral rich and it's so pure. It's the way we remember water as kids. That was one thing. And you don't need broth, you just cook with it. Secondly, their rice is indigenous, which is really, really unusual, and it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. It's not like you think about paddy rice. It grows more like a grain. And it's indigenous. It's really a fairly recent discovery, just from the 60s, of the rice. But the rice is incredible. And they have this dish called pico gallo, which we would just call beans and rice, that is everywhere at every meal. At breakfast, you see pico gallo.
I'd fit in well there.
Yeah, yeah. But it's terrific stuff, because they have the salsa lozano that was developed in Costa Rica in the 20s that's basically a vegetable sauce. That is a big ingredient of pico gallo, as well as lots of coriander and the coriander and cilantro, but they don't look like our cilantro. The plants are totally different. Well, the interesting thing about the Nicoya for us is, having come from the leafy green diet, well, being basically a semi-tropical area, you weren't going to go to the grocery store or the farmer's market and get kale. It wasn't going to happen, because the climate just wouldn't support it. And we did a couple of tours of people that had organic gardens, this wonderful, wonderful ashram of some, I guess they're Hindus, but they were not so much, but their total plant-based lifestyle, that had come there to settle, and they are wanting to be self-sufficient. Well, and doing their tour and talking to them, is their greens are fresh moringa leaves, mm-hmm. And Haya, C-H-A-Y-A, which is a fascinating plant, has it's extremely high in nitrates. And this plant that I don't think it's indigenous, they call it Costa Rican spinach, but it tastes a lot like spinach, but I wasn't that crazy about it. But the kale, the mainland, on Saturdays, a fresh produce truck would come to the coast with organic fruit and organic foods. And they grow kale in the mountains on the mainland, so it could come over. It's not, I don't think it's the same deal as our kale, because I'm sure climate-wise our kale was different. But getting kale was a challenge, but by the same token, the moringa leaves and the haya was wonderful. So that worked out okay. The water was terrific. Their black beans, their red beans, all their fresh produce, and the fruits were amazing. Their names were in Spanish, and they're not exported, but they were wonderful to have the fresh vegetables and the fruit every day as well. And there's this one fruit, a pibijaya, I think is the way you say it, that is a big deal. And then getting back and getting on PubMed and doing the research, they're attributing the very, very, very little incidence of all these gastrointestinal problems and color cancers and whatnot to the people in Nicoya because of this fruit. They're doing a lot of the studies on the fruit enzymes. Has some wonderful enzymes in it. But, of course, it's the same scenario. You have to go there to eat it, because you're not going to find it in the grocery
store. So did you find that the people you ran into that ran these kind of the farms and some of these places, did you see a lot of older, just really vibrant people?
Yes, the man that was kind of like the handyman sort at the ashram that we went to, Habavin, I think was the name of, wonderful people. I think he was going to be 90 his next birthday. He was running the Weed Eater. And then talking to the doc, the town doc, who was a great guy. He'd done his internship in Miami. He was Costa Rican, and then he'd come back and a part of the government helping with his education and whatnot, and then talking with him about the plant-based lifestyle, is he was all in tune to that. And I said, well, what about your patients? And he said, basically, the Ticos, which is what they call the Costa Ricans, the Ticos, if I see one of them, I'm usually just needing to take a fish hook out of their finger or something. He said, all of the really challenging cases that I get are all the expats that come down here and do nothing but drink and eat hamburgers and cheese. And or stay sick all the time.
So he wouldn't have a job if they weren't
exactly.
there.
Exactly. That was the case, that he was very clear that the expats did not adopt the lifestyle.
Wow.
And it was interesting, too, because the Samar Organics, where we shopped and then got our, or if you didn't go to the farmer's market, we would have gone to the farmer's market a lot more if we were fluent in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
It just really
made
it. So
now you're going to up your Spanish and go back later.
We're going to classes now. So.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well,
Louis Bien.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack, thank you so much for coming and being with us today.
It was fun. It's like, I think we've laughed about it. It's just so unusual that to have two Esselstyn alumni in the same town.
Yes, no, there's no question about that.
Even more ironic is Dr. Esselstyn has two videos on his website, and it's me and you.
that's true. You think about that, and that's an amazing thing.
Well, just one more time before we leave, just to remind everyone that we are Plant-Based OKC. Our website is plantbasedokc.com. If you want to attend one of our seminars, you can go on to the website and see the dates, and there'll be a link to sign up. I think I forgot to mention earlier that I am on Facebook and Instagram as Plant-Based OKC, and I post all of my recipes and things I'm making and cooking on there. So if you have social media and would like to follow us there, please do. And then
our seminars are free of charge because we made the conscious decision to do that. Dr. Esselstyn's seminar, which ours is kind of modeled after, now I think is $1,600 per seminar.
Ours is a little bit cheaper.
It's just a little bit.
Yeah. We run specials all the time.
Well, and I just think we want to reach a mass.
Correct.
You know, I don't know that his role right now is reaching the masses. He's reaching very particular people like Jack, who was very ill, or you. And I think he's seeing doctors and other people coming, wanting to get information. And, you know, we're really just trying to reach the general public.
Right.
With having an attendance between 40 and 50 people a month at our seminars, I think that Oklahoma's, the word is getting out. And I think you see that in a lot of plant-based restaurants and food trucks opening up. They may not be the healthiest, but in my opinion, it means the word is getting out. People are looking for better alternatives. They're hearing the whole plant-based lifestyle and are wanting to, you know, find out more about that. So I think the movement is growing.
Yeah, Dr. Esselstyn, if I can interject, Dr. Esselstyn couldn't do what you were doing. He couldn't. The time we went, I think it was probably similar to when y'all went, there were six people there.
Right.
There were six couples, and I think he tries to limit it to that.
Maybe there were eight.
Something like that.
Yeah, but it was still a very small.
He's couple, going over labs, and it's an individual.
Yeah. With a couple of physicians, where he couldn't do any kind of numerical thing.
And we're not trying to talk to each individual person and diagnose their situation. And most of these people, I mean, we've gotten some people that are dealing with some serious health issues, but we are mostly just trying to educate people as to what they want to do in their life, you know, going forward, or if they happen to be faced with an issue. But that's all the time we have for today. So we will see you on the next fourth Tuesday of the month. Peace out.